And in Exodus chapter 9, we're talking about the hail. And verse 23, Moses stretched out his rod towards heaven. The Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground. And the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. I've heard some say that because of the word dart here in the original language and fire being mentioned, that what we're talking about is not really hail, but the word hail was used accommodatively to try and explain what it was like. I've heard some suppose, not definitively prove, of course, but just suppose that maybe we're talking about meteor showers happening here, and it's actually not ice that hits, but it's rock from outer space. That would have been cool, but I can't prove that. So again, and that's just one thought to bring here, that when you read commentaries or you do much more research into this text, you might see that, so don't be too surprised. Verse 24, and so there was hail, and fire mingled with the hail, so that very heavy, there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. The hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, this is verse 25, and all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the people of Israel were, there was no hail. So again, we have the livestock that was diseased earlier. We had swarms that came through and bit the people, right? The swarms of flies, some translations add there for us to kind of read it in a bit more smooth way. We have the hail striking down the herb of the field here in verse 25, breaking every tree of the field, which would have been a shame, of course, for produce. And that's not the end of that when it comes to the resources of Israel. So verse 27, this might sound again like Groundhog Day, that Pharaoh is going to say the exact same thing he said before, and yet he broke his promise twice. And here we find verse 27, Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time. So previously wasn't a sin, now he sinned this time, right? So you kind of read this almost tongue-in-cheek, because at this point we know Pharaoh's heart's already hard. The Lord is righteous, and my people and I are wicked. Entreat the Lord that there may be no more mighty thundering and hail, for it is enough. I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. So do you remember all the way back in the beginning of this, when Moses was being told what was going to happen before he even went back to Egypt? There would be a point in which God told him that not only will he let you go, he will kick you out of his property. He's going to ask you to leave. He will bring you out because he's sick and tired of you guys. That was kind of a predictive prophecy of him not only wanting them to go and be fulfilled by sacrificing to God, but he wanted to get rid of them. And this is the reason why we're kind of getting closer to that point. It's not quite there yet. If you don't know, verse 29, so Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the Lord. The thundering will cease and there will be no more hail, that you may know that the earth is the Lord's. Here is a little clue as to why all these plagues, so-called, are so significant. The very end of verse 29, Moses is the mediator between God, Jehovah, and Pharaoh. These two people in authority, although one, of course, is much more mighty than the other, he is a representative of the Most High, and he is explaining to him who God truly is. And one of the ways for Pharaoh to have to learn who God was, when he said, I don't know this God, nor will I let his people go, he's saying, when I go forth and I talk to him about this, the earth belongs to the Lord, he's going to stop it. Verse 30, but as for you and your servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Lord God. Well, how in the world did he know that? Well, God told him, but God told him a whole lot of stuff he didn't quite believe all the way yet. But we're learning is that not only is Pharaoh learning about God, who else is learning about God? What's that? Israelites are, but also Moses. This is the guy that when God chose him as a shepherd to go back and save his kinsmen, his people, that he wanted to save 40 years before by his own strength, he's giving all these excuses as to why he can't go. I can't go because of this, and my tongue is kind of tied, and I'm not good at speaking, and I don't know your name, and what if they don't believe me? And God says, don't worry about all that. I'm with you. He goes, well, what if they... And so he's still kind of floundering, and then now he's at a point says, I know that you're not really going to believe. You're not really going to respect God quite yet because God said so. So verse 31, now the flax and the barley were struck, for the barley was in the head and the flax was in the bud. So it wasn't quite time yet, but the livestock was being destroyed. But the wheat and the spelt were not struck, for they are late crops. Good to know for people that are not primarily in an agricultural society anymore. It's good to know that we have one season of time already stopped because of God's plagues, and now we have a second season coming up to finish. Verse 33. So Moses went out from the city of Pharaoh, spread out his hands to the Lord. The thunder and the hail ceased. The rain was not poured on the earth. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more. He hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of Pharaoh was hard, and neither would he let the people of Israel go as the Lord had spoken by Moses. So again, same old, right? Same pattern developing here with Pharaoh. Times were hard. He says he repents. He goes to Moses. The mediator says he's sorry. He says, yeah, I'll do whatever you want me to do now. And then the bad times stop, and then he kind of goes back on his word, right? The application we made from that a couple of weeks ago was sometimes when times get tough for us, we will say, God, all right, you've broken me. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do. I'll be more submissive to your will. I'll read my Bible more. I'll go to church more and so on. And then when times get easier, we say, well, you know, I didn't really mean that. I meant like, you know, every now and again, I'll do what you want me to do. And we kind of harden ourselves to that again. Right, so that's kind of one application from that. Okay, questions, comments, suggestions, bones to pick, fist fights to have, any of that about chapter 8 or 9? By the way, I fight not for myself. I fight through a champion, right? I put forth Howard because his hands are massive. You ever shaken Howard's hand before? You got that bear claw? Man, I wish I had hands half as strong as Howard's, but I got little dainty girl hands. Okay, chapter 10, verse 1. Everybody's awake. That's good. Go ahead and sip your coffee if you've got it. There used to be a saying that my commander for ROTC would say to high school students, smoke them if you got them. That's not what I'm encouraging you to do. I'm telling you, sip your coffee if you happen to have coffee with you. One guy. We were out in formation, and he said, well, smoke them if you got them. And he actually pulled out a pack of cigarettes. He was a 15-year-old kid. And Commander looked at him like, "Are you?" No, I was kidding. That was a joke. I'm supposed to laugh at it. He goes, oh, okay. You didn't see that. Okay, chapter 10, verse 1. All right. And then now the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh. For I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him. We've already, I think, exhausted the idea of verse 34. He hardened his heart, and Pharaoh's heart was hard, verse 35. And then the Lord said that he did it in chapter 10, verse 1. Those are those two passages I mentioned all the time before, talking about how one says the Lord did it, one says Pharaoh did it. Is this a contradiction? Is the Bible wrong? Can we just go home and sleep in or what? And then we explained it with the idea of perspective, right? I think I used the ridiculous illustration of knocking a cup out of someone's hand last week. If you missed that, it was perfect. Explain the whole idea perfectly. No one had any more questions or controversy. If you missed it, hey, you slept in for daylight savings time? That's what you miss. Me knocking the coffee cup out of someone's hand. I mean, good times. Verse 2, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your son's son the mighty things that I have done in Egypt and my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord. This is going to be a theme we're going to see in verse 2. Some of these things are over the top. I mean, they're just more than was necessary. It's a little overkill. So the poor crops, right, they're suffering from the Nile turning to blood. It's hard to water your crops with blood, last time I thought about it, right? That's difficult. And we have all these other plagues that are happening. All the frogs come out. You have the lice or the swarms that come out. You have all these things that are affecting the field, that are affecting the crops. I mean, he could have just wiped out the crops and be done with it, but this is definitely something that's going to be memorable. And that's kind of the point in verse 2, is that these things are kind of hard to forget. And yet every time we see someone looking at the people of Israel as a great nation later, generations from now, and they're starting to backslide, they're starting to go back into sin, into idolatry, and so on, the people that want to reform them, that want to bring them back to where they were when they were righteous in God's sight, they'll say, "Don't you remember what God did for us when he saved us from Egypt, when he led us by the hand through the Red Sea, spoiler alert, and then all these things happened to us? Do you remember all these great things that God did to prove who he was? That's the still same God that we serve now, and you're rejecting him just like Pharaoh did," right? So these things are memorable that we can, or they could, in their posterity, tell that story, tell the account, and have them remember it. And we're going to see that happens not only in this period, but in Moses at the end of his life. He says, "Look, I know you're going to rebel, you're going to reject God, but do not forget the law, and do not forget what God did for you by saving you from Egypt." So the lesson from that, the application from that, is that sometimes we can just forget. We can just kind of let life go on in our own life and our children's lives and our grandchildren's lives, and we can just kind of forget to bring up all the things that God has done for us. And so it's good for us to always remember never to forget, is one line, right, that kind of stuck with me. Always remember never to forget. Verse 3. "So Moses and Aaron came into Pharaoh and said to him, 'Thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me. Or else, if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your territory.'" What are locusts? Bugs? Grasshoppers? Same kind of species, right? Definitely bugs. They're the ones that come in and eat all the crops. Grasshoppers, they look like giant grasshoppers on steroids, right? They're the Dwayne the Rock Johnson of grasshoppers. They're just roided out, big old thick neck guys, and they just roll in there and they just tear things up, right? If you don't know who the Rock is, don't worry about it. One thing that kind of confused me growing up is I always thought locusts were different. I thought that they were cicadas, if you know what cicadas are. So whenever I read this, I was like, man, all these giant flying bugs running around and hitting things and in the middle of the night and leaving their little shells on the trees. It's a cicada, not a locust. So different thing, but still kind of interesting thought. Interesting application, perfect segue into a bulletin article that may or may not be in the bulletin this morning. Yep. Yep. It's funny how we just evolved for millions of years for them to figure out how to do that. That's so intelligent of them to just to kind of go through that whole process of figuring out where to fly and then passing it down to the little grasshopper babies and then the next generation. I'm saying sarcastically because, of course, they're designed to do that. That's the way that God made them, right? Good point. Okay, let's move forward. The locusts are coming, right? Verse 5. "And they shall cover the face of the earth so that no one will be able to see the earth, for they shall eat the residue of what is left. What remains to you from the hail, they shall eat every tree with which grows up for you out of the field." So if it wasn't bad enough that they were going through a famine here because of the hail mingled with fire, whatever that was, now whatever was left, this late crop, was going to be destroyed by the locusts, right? And it was so intense, so thick, he said here, that they wouldn't even be able to see the ground. When you look out in the middle of the day, normally you see ground, right? You see dirt, you see grass, you see the field or whatever. You would just see the blanket of locusts that are just consuming all the food that you have for you and your family and your nation. All right, verse 6. They shall fill your houses, the houses of all your servants, the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither your fathers nor your fathers' fathers have seen since the day that they were on the earth to this day. And he turned and went out from Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh's servants said to him, who's the him in the text? Who's that him? Pharaoh, right? How long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go that they may serve the Lord their God. Do you not yet know that Egypt is destroyed? What we call that is a failure of morale. Now we've got the king standing by himself, because even now his servants, the people that are for a living designed to tell Pharaoh what he wants to hear and to serve his every whim, now they're turning against him and saying, just let him go already. Haven't you seen the picture? We're doomed. We're going to be wiped off the face of the earth. Our gods have nothing on this guy. Let him go. Verse 8. Moses and Aaron were brought again to Pharaoh, and he said to them, go, serve the Lord your God. Who are the ones that are going? Well, I mean, why do you have to ask? Let my people go. That's pretty much all of them, right? He said, verse 9, we will go out with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and our herds. We will go, for we must hold a feast to the Lord. And then he said, the Lord had better be with you when I let you and your little ones go. Beware, for evil's ahead of you. Oh, big bad Pharaoh's got something to say now. Well, when you go out and I ask you to leave, you better go. That's right. You better keep running. Okay. Not so. Go now, you who are a man, and serve the Lord, for that is what you desired. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So what was his compromise? You can go. Just don't take all your stuff or all your people. Seems fair. It's exactly what Moses wanted, right? Just to take the men? No, that's not what God said. The Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand. All right, so this is a little comical to me, but again, I'm twisted. So we have Moses going to Pharaoh, saying, I'm going to bring some locusts upon you, and they're going to eat all your food. It's going to mess your whole life up. Hope you're ready for it, because you still have your heart as hardened, and you won't obey the Lord. Pharaoh goes, nah, you can't go. Moses' servants go, can you just let them go already, please? We're going to be destroyed if you don't. And he goes, all right, call them back in. So they come back in. All right, so who wants to go now? Everybody? No. How about just the guys go, and then everybody else stays? Is that okay? And then the Lord says, wait, guys, Moses, just lift up your hand, in verse 12, over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt, eat every herb of the land, and all of the hail has left. So God just shuts down that whole negotiation and just says, no, Pharaoh, we're not going to have it your way. We're going to do what I said at the very beginning. That's how it's going to be. Verse 13, Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. It's interesting to me that we have a little bit of a natural detail mentioned to us in verse 13. The east wind that came in, it brought the locusts in, right? It's an interesting little natural detail. God could just, poof, they're the locust all of a sudden, right? But instead, God chose more of a natural means to bring them in, right? So he brought that east wind to the land of Egypt, which would have been unusual, no doubt, at that time of year. And all the locusts kind of came with that east wind. Why is that detail mentioned to us? I don't know. But it's kind of an interesting little thing that's added there for a very specific detail that otherwise it wouldn't have. And the locusts went up over the land of Egypt and rested on all the territory of Egypt. They rested. No big deal. They were just sitting there lounging around all day. Oh, wait. They were very severe. Previously, there had been had been no such locusts as they, nor shall there be such after them. For they covered the face of the whole earth. The land was darkened, and they ate every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees that the hail had left. So there remained nothing green on the trees or on the plants of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. Imagine in the middle of springtime, middle of summer, or the end of summer now is when we're talking about this time of the year. looking out in the middle of a time where everything is supposed to be green, everything is supposed to be lush, supposed to be a beautiful environment, and now absolutely everything is dead. That's what they woke up to the next day, right? That's exactly what they were told was going to happen. That's what took place. Verse 16, Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste. I wonder why. And said, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Again, Groundhog's Day, same thing, different day. Now, therefore, please forgive my sin only this once and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. So he's starting to get a little bit more particular in the words he's trying to use, more precise. You know what? This is just my fault. It's not the people anymore. It's my fault. So please spare them. So he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. And the Lord turned a very strong west wind, which took the locusts away and blew them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the territory of Egypt. So the frogs, they were allowed to reside in the places where they would normally reside, right? And now the locusts were just wiped out. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go. Again, that whole who hardened his heart perspective situation pops up. That's why I've been hitting it so hard every time we came across it, so we don't have to stop every time for that question. Does anyone have any questions about that particular text, however? Is anyone still troubled? Oh, Eric, go ahead.
I think in terms of why instead of east
wind, yeah. That's interesting. Try the Jordan, yes, so they can go across.
Also, with nothing being east, you know, immediately east anyway, but the Red Sea, it makes it more miraculous. They flow into the forest, they blew it or not.
Yeah. Later on, I don't know if it's an Exodus or not. It might. I feel like it's going to have to be in Exodus. I can't remember the actual chapter, though. But when they start to go out, and the Lord's leading them by that pillar of smoke by day and fire by night, or as a fire by night, and they're going in that direction, finally, he kind of redirects their course, right? We used to have a GPS. I don't know if you still use an actual Garmin or a GPS anymore. I use my phone now. But the old ones, you had to plug them into your computer and get a Wi-Fi connection and then download the updates for all the new roads they're building. And sometimes they weren't right. They were close, but they were a couple of miles off. So driving to church one morning, it was about 2 hours away. And every road I took that it took me to drive in Tennessee, it said rerouting, rerouting, rerouting. And it would just keep saying that to me until I got on the road that didn't exist, right? So when they start to finally go, God reroutes them kind of away from one specific territory that was at war. And it says that God knew that they would be afraid of the people that were like giants in the land. So he kind of went around for a while until all that was settled, right? So it tells me that God knew enough to allow them the mercy of not leaving Egypt and going right to Canaan, because that transition would be way too much. Because they would want to go right back into Egypt where it was safe and they had food and they had families and they had lives. If they went straight from slavery to war against the Canaanites, that would be way too much at one time. And so coming from the east, like you were saying, coming from the Red Sea, not only were locusts coming from that direction, but there were people that were very vicious in that direction too. So although they were leaving that way, they were kind of sent around the mountains the long way to kind of mature a little bit, I guess would be one way of saying it. Okay, anyone more questions or comments? Okay. And then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand towards heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. Well, how's that work? So that's my only illustration for this. I've probably said it here before, but I'm going to tell you again. There are only one occasion that I went down into a cavern. Luray Caverns out in Virginia. We went down there for a vacation. We're just driving around. That vacation, Mom, is burnt into my memory because we only had one CD. Well, we had one tape, which was Stevie Nicks. So I learned a lot about Stevie Nicks that trip, driving through the mountains of Virginia and West Virginia. And then we had one CD. Do you know what that CD was? It was the Dixie Chicks. Now, whenever I hear Dixie Chicks, my mind goes into post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome, and I just, oh no, I'm a 10-year-old kid again! And I know all the lyrics still. It came on. Obviously, it would have come on when Mom was here visiting with us. We went out to Mount Pleasant. We went down to Boone Hall Plantation Farmers Market. And of course, as soon as my mother, my wife, my daughter was wrapped up, and me walked in the door, I'm an adult now, and I hear the Dixie Chicks come on. It's a song I haven't heard since I was like a 10 or 11. So I'm like, of course I know all these lyrics. Anyway, sorry, I went back there in my mind. When we were driving to that area, we came across the Ray Caverns, and we went down into it, and the tour guide walks the group down, and it gets colder and colder, and you're wearing a t-shirt because it's hot, and now all of a sudden you're freezing because it's, you know, you're underground, everything is dark, and it's kind of lit by all these lights. You get down to the deepest part that you can go with the tour guide, and then what do? They turn the light off. You sit there for a second and hear the drip, 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 the iconic kind of cavernous sounds, right? And no one's really saying anything. And you put your hand right in front of your face just to see how dark it is. You can't see your hand right here. You can feel almost like a blanket wrapped around your entire body just because of how dark it is. So whenever I read a darkness which may even be felt, yeah, that's possible. But having that for, what, 30 seconds in the bottom of Luray Caverns versus having that for however long it lasted here? I haven't heard that one before. Oh, well, might have had different intentions. I don't know. Verse 22, they wanted my money, not to scare me to half to death. So Moses stretched out his hand towards heaven. Now, how many meanings are there for the word heaven in the Hebrew tradition? Y'all should know this after all these years. Three? Close. Four. Four different kinds of heaven. So the context tells us which kind of heaven we're talking about. Talking about heaven where the birds fly, just up in the general air. So we have the earth and we have heaven. So heaven and earth. Which, by the way, when there is a new heavens and a new earth, it simply means a place for our head, place for our feet. That's kind of what that means for one quick definition of that. So we have where our head is, where the birds fly. You have the heaven, which kind of means space, as we normally call it. We have heaven, meaning life after death, meaning after judgment. And then we have heaven, where God is. So when we have heaven talked about in the context, you try to figure out which heaven it is that we're referencing. If we're talking about the afterlife, either talking about after death heaven, that's the third heaven, right? Caught up in a third heaven is what Paul said. What's that? Hades. Yeah. It can get complex, though, because we're transitioning from the Hebrew definition to the Greek. So when you transition from the third heaven from the Hebrew tradition to the Greek word Hades, it kind of gets a bit muddled because of some translation. So it is correct, but... Right. Torment. Torment, or... Yes, that's the Greek transliteration of it. So it can get a bit complex, but just simply here from the Hebrew perspective, talking about stretching out his hand towards heaven, well, I think we're talking about just the idea of upwards, not pointing directly, hey, God, you know, he's not really up there anyway. That there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. He stretched out his hand towards heaven, and there was thick darkness all in the land of Egypt for 3 days. Interesting number. Why 3 days?
Christ was in the tomb for 3 days.
Could be.
John was in the way for 3 days.
Could be. What's that? He liked 3 days? He likes three. Yeah, God's a fan of three. That's just, of course, why all good sermons have 3 points. I mean, there's a design for all this stuff, right? And I say jokingly, because I have like 4 or 5 points all the time.
You make a point on the third.
There we go. There's also a joke somewhere in here about having guests stay with you. More than 3 days. 3 days just seems to feel right for some reason. I didn't say that out loud. So, anyway, three, of course, is an interesting number when it comes to biblical numerology. 3 and 7 and 6 and 1. Those are all significant numbers. 10 is important. 12 is important. Why is 12 important? I don't know. 12 is important, though. You have 12 tribes. You have 12 apostles and so on. Even though they were actually 14 or so, they're still called the 12 in the book of Revelation. So interesting kind of side note there for that. So 3 days. Don't know why, but definitely one of God's favorite numbers. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. So they got a vacation for 3 days because they couldn't do anything else. But all the people of Israel had light in their dwellings. Interesting. So this may seem to indicate that the only ones who actually had light were the Egyptians, or were the Israelites, not the Egyptians. The opposite of what I wanted to say came out. It's always the case. So, interesting kind of distinction there made, of course, again. Verse 24. And then Pharaoh called Moses. Guess what he wanted? Go and serve the Lord. Only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you. So he's trying to compromise a bit more. Okay, last time we were in negotiations, Moses, listen, here's what you wanted, all the people to go. Okay, I heard you. I came at you with a compromise, just take the guys. You said no, right? Well, this time, get this, take your little ones with you. How's that sound? Kind of, you know, greasing the wheel a little bit. How about that? Just don't take your livestock with you so you can't actually have a feast, which you wanted to do in the first place, right? How's that sound? Verse 25, Moses said, you must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice the Lord our God. Do you forget why we want to go in the first place? Right? Verse 26, our livestock also shall go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind. It's a funny way to say it. For we must take some of them to serve the Lord our God, and even we do not know with what we must serve the Lord until we arrive there. He's saying, look, I don't know what God wants yet. We have to go to get there. Step one is go with all our stuff, and then God tells us what he wants. Why is he saying it that way? Because the law has not yet been given through Moses to the people. So the requirements of what they had to do to be righteous in God's sight, or counted righteous technically, I suppose, was not prescribed to them quite yet. Moses didn't even really know what the conditions were up until that point. Verse 27, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. He would not let them go. And then Pharaoh said to him, get away from me. Take heed to yourself and see my face no more. For in the day that you see my face, you shall die. And Moses said, fine with me, buddy. You have spoken well. I will never see your face again. All right, now we're on to the final step. And this one is the doozy. This is the one that they've been waiting for this whole time. Everything up until this point has been an announcement from God throughout these different plagues of he's more powerful than this God that you serve. He's more powerful than this God that you serve. He's more powerful than all the gods that you serve, because there's only one Lord. This next one is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, but it's not really just the straw. This is the one that has so much to say to Pharaoh and to us. Chapter 11. I'll read verse 1, and then we'll be dismissed for this morning. And the Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. The thing that God knew was going to happen all along was about to happen here in chapter 11 and chapter 12. He says, when this next one is done, it's not going to be just frogs or swarms or flies or darkness or any of that. This is going to be the one that he's going to ask you to leave, and he's going to force you to leave. So be prepared. Okay, final questions or comments this morning about this text so far. We're going to slow down a little bit on this next one just because there's so much application for us to draw from this next text. All right, so we'll make all the application that we possibly can. So if you're familiar with this next plague, the death of the firstborn and the Passover, come prepared to have some input about what your perspectives are from this particular miracle that took place. Okay? Thank you very much for your attention. We'll be dismissed now for about 15 minutes before worship.